and everything that they accomplished together. Okay, so first, the story. I'm going to break this into three parts, and I'll spend most of my time on the third part. And it's chronologically, so I'm going to say a bit from 1998 to 2009, 2009 to end of 2013, and basically 2014, the band. First phase, 1998, this S.H. Griffin well was hydraulically fractured just outside the city limits of Denver. And that well really was the beginning of massive slick water hydraulic fracturing as we know it today. It initiated the revolution. And so Denton and Fort Worth were two of the first places to experience the bonanza of shale gas development that went on. And it really started in the early 2000s. Denton, in 2001, passed the very first ordinance regulating for urban shale gas development anywhere. That was in December of 2001. And there were some clashes that went on. But what was most interesting is from 98 to 2009, roughly 240 gas wells were drilled in our city limits. And it was mostly in sort of rural areas to the west, and it was creeping closer and closer to the more densely developed parts. There were skirmishes here and there, but they were handled in a sort of ad hoc muddling through fashion, satisficing, fix this little problem and move on. One of the things you're in a position to do that we were not, because we only came to awareness after we had been fracked, right? One of the positions you're in is to see the whole picture from the beginning and have a holistic view of it. What we were doing is permitting this well and permitting that well, and nobody sort of stepped back and said, what are we doing? We're parking our city with industrial zones all over the place without any sort of comprehensive plan about this or any idea. So that was that's sort of our legacy. That's all I'll say about that phase. Let me jump to the next phase. What happened in 2009 was a kind of watershed moment for us. A Range Resources got permits from the Texas Railroad Commission, our regulatory, state regulatory body, to frack three wells right next, across the street from a park, a hospital, and a neighborhood. Kathy McMullen, personalities matter. That's one of my messages. People matter. Things happen in large part in Denton because of Kathy McMullen. Again, everybody had to contribute, but she was sort of the instigator. She had just moved away from a fracking site west of town to have this fracking site go up right next to her house, and she said, I'm done with this. I'm going to do something about it. And what she did was she contacted Texas Sharon Wilson. Maybe some of you all have heard of Sharon Wilson. She's the biggest thorn in the side of the industry, probably. Sharon lived around Denton at the time. They got together with the neighbors, and they started organizing in that neighborhood. They got TCEQ forms to fill out complaints, odor logs, right? They petitioned city council to not permit these wells. They took FLIR camera footage of the site. They grabbed Summa air canister samples from the site. They went door to door passing the hat to raise money to do that because nobody else was going to monitor these things. They even got doctors in the hospital to write a letter to city council opposing this. This was the very first germination of an actually organized resistance in Denton. It was around that well, McKenna Park. That was 2009. City council permitted it because the ongoing narrative was, our hands are tied. We'd really like to help you out, but this is a Texas state thing. And there was this cautious narrative running throughout that was largely driven by our city attorney. We can't really do it. We've got to permit it. If we don't permit it, we'll get sued. But city council recognized our regulations need to be revised. And so they initiated a revision process at that time. What they did, though, strangely, I don't know why they did this, but they formed a task force that was a majority members from the industry. Kevin Roden, so I'm mentioning names because it's, like I say, people drove this story. Kevin Roden, city council member, was recently elected at the time. And Kevin said, we need more citizen perspective. right? To balance out the task force. I mean, sure, industry has some expertise, but they obviously carry a bias too. So he approached me, and this is when I got in the story, and this was 2011, the summer of 2011. So things were dithering around for a while there with that well before we really got going with revising the ordinance. In 2011, he said, I want you to start a shadow commission, a citizens advisory commission. You won't have any official power from the city, but I want you to pull together what I call citizen experts. People who know about it, not because they're credentialed experts, but because they've been living it or they've been studying it on the internet, they have valuable voices to contribute. So that's what we did. That was the beginning of what was called the Denton Stakeholder Drilling Advisory Group. I'll just call it DAG, D-A-G. And I was the chair of it, and I got Kathy was the first person I signed up, Sharon, Ed and Carol Soph, Rhonda Love, she was a retired health public health professor. Ed's a musician, but he knows the precautionary principle really well. And we tried to just cobble together these citizen experts into a panel. And what we did, because we needed to earn some credibility or legitimacy, because who are we? We're just people. We're not the experts. We're not the lawyers or the engineers or the industry. So we invited those people to talk to us, and we ran panels. So the first year and a half, we just had, I don't even know what to call them, town hall meetings, where I would call up the executive director of the Railroad Commission and say, come talk to us about how you regulate this industry. And he came, and we would host it at UNT, and we'd get 200 people, overflow capacity. People really wanted to hear about this. We called up Calvin Tillman. Some of you may know him, mayor of Dish, Texas. He's in the Gasland movies. Been a big supporter of ours. When Calvin came in, we had a session called Lessons from Our Neighbors, because Dish had been totally overgrown. He had been working on it. And people came in droves. And what happened is slowly we were building up credibility and legitimacy to the point where the official task force, the industry, staff, paused their activities to let us do what we were doing. They kind of went into a hiatus. And then, but while we were doing this, they kept permitting fracking operations. 9 more wells were permitted over the months we were doing this, and so we realized we got to do something. So we wrote a report to city council. Here's what we learned, right, from our own research, from having people come in and talk to us. We brought in the industry as well. Devon Energy came and talked to us. And we wrote a report for city council and said, these are our recommendations for what the ordinance should be. And no, nobody was saying ban fracking. In fact, one lady left our, Elma Walker, left our committee, the DAG, saying, because we wanted to ask for a 1,500-foot setback, and she said, that's too radical. I'm out of here. You're a bunch of radicals. I'll forget this story because I'll fill it in. Actually, the beautiful part about this story is Elma, who said that was too radical. There was a point where there's a lot of conniving that went on with the Republicans who wanted us to take part in a forum that we wouldn't take part in because it was stacked, it was a trap. And they held it anyways, and they had this open chair up there and said, look, DAG won't even take part in defending their own ban, they said, right? Is there anybody in this room, hundreds of people in this room, that would want to stand up and speak for DAG? You know who raised her hand? Elma Walker raised her hand.
A member of the Denton County Republican.
Came up and debated their hired gun attorney for an hour, defending the ban. The same woman who a couple years ago said, that's too radical. I mean, it's just amazing sort of stories that are sprinkled throughout. Okay, but that was an aside. I didn't think I was going to tell that story. Okay. I guess that's what I want to say about that. So what happened is eventually we put an ordinance together, and nobody was perfectly happy with it. January 2013, it passed. City Council was burned out at this point. Everybody was burned out at this point. But it was a decent ordinance, and it's on the books, and it said 1,200 feet is the minimum setback distance between a well and what's called a protected use, a home, a park, a playground, a school, anything like that, 1,200 feet. That was the big piece of it. Of course, it's 60 pages long, so there's a lot in there, right? A lot of it is what you might call just sort of regulating the practices about what kinds of drilling, how they're going to handle drilling fluids. And a lot of stuff we didn't like is they still allowed pits in town, waste pits. There was no monitoring required. Although city council said last minute, we're going to do monitoring. We'll do it. We won't build it in the ordinance, But we're, I promise. And I believed them, and I said, I came up with my remarks that night, the last public hearing, and they said, well, thank you. I look forward to working with you. In fact, I brought in an air monitoring expert after this, and nobody listened. That promise went away. But all those things aside, was it, well, it's better than what we started with, right? And everybody was burned out. And we just went into kind of dormancy for a while. I thought, dag, really, I thought we were done. I was writing a lot of blogs. I wrote sort of an assessment of the ordinance blog. I gave it a C-, right? But it passed, right? And so that was it. Now let me enter this. So that's the second phase of the story. Let me enter the third phase of the story. It starts in September of 2013. A woman named Sandy Maddox, another important mover, calls Peggy Hinkle Wolf, our local reporter, and says, there are gas wells going up right next to my house. And Peggy's response, and we love Peggy, but her response was, that's not news. Right? Happens all the time. Sandy wouldn't take that for an answer. She said, well, I think it's news, right? I can't breathe. I'm getting these headaches. Seems like news to me. So she called Kathy. Kathy went down there to look at it and got on her cell phone and said, Adam, get down here. And I got down. I looked at it. This is crazy because what was happening, despite our ordinance that said 1,200-foot setback, there were two rigs, one in the north of this neighborhood, one in the south of the neighborhood, less than 200 feet from home. So 187 to the closest home. The school bus stop when I was down there, because what we decided to do, and it was like, we're trying to figure out what's going on. Well, let's take our flyers. So we made up flyers. Who to contact if you smell something, you hear something, right? All the numbers of your city council members, TCEQ, Railroad Commission, gas well administrator, and we're putting them door to door. And as I was doing that, I saw a bus dropping off school children right next to the rip. And I saw moms grabbing their kids, kind of running into the home. And moms, that Halloween, those streets were silent because they would not let their kids outside because the drilling activity was 24/7. So that's when I said, we have to do something. We have to do something more about this. We didn't really know yet, but at that point, that's when the band started bubbling in our head. So why?
Yeah. Can you explain why there were wells that were 200 feet away? I'm sorry.
So we had to ask. So Dalton Gregory, one of our city council members, met with me, and I said, "Why is this happening after this ordinance? I mean, this is the very industrialization of a neighborhood that we were trying to prevent, and here it's happening." And he said, "There's two things. One." Is this is a reverse setback distance where you have an existing pad site, even though one of the wells is new, quote-unquote new, because it's on an existing site that had been permitted and platted and had another well on it. That project was already in place and you're bringing homes towards it. And so the assumption is that people know what they're buying when they buy these homes. Of course, there is no disclosure. Nobody knew. It was a complete surprise to everybody. In fact, the sales agents would often lie to people if they would notice this. Like, what is that? Oh, it's an abandoned well, or it's a water facility or something, right? The other one, so there you have this reverse setback, which is premised on the presumption of informed consent, that people know what they're getting into, but they don't. The bigger one, the stickier one even than that, though, is vested rights, which is the operators were claiming in this case and acting on the basis of the claim that because these sites, whether permitted or even just platted by the city, without even an existing well on it yet, say, those are vested under the rules that you had in place when we had got that permit or that plat. These particular wells were vested under 2003 rules. Back in 2003, they had a public hearing about those. There were no homes then, but that's when the city decided this is an okay project. Right, and that's what counted as a regulatory decision in that case. So we had the vested rights problem, we had the lack of disclosure problem. Of those, I think the vested rights was the biggest because we went in, Kathy and Sharon went into the fire department and got all of the plats, and they realized there are 11,000 acres of our city that are platted already for gas well development. And we're sort of fated, if this vested rights narrative holds, we're sort of fated to have again and again, industrialization of the neighborhood. So we realized as DAG, which quickly sort of revived, we are going to either spend the rest of our time decades maybe, taking our little TCEQ forms and doing our little dog and pony show about welcome to an industrial zone, right? Here's how to try to live through it. Or we could draw a line in the sand. I mean, it seemed like that was those were our options. Because I guess we could go back to the drawing board and try to revise the ordinance, but we had done it. We spent years doing that. Nobody wanted to do that again. It was fruitless. That's the reason, I would say, that convinced me to pursue the dance, right? And I was really one of the last ones to be convinced. You can Google my name. I've written stuff in Slate questioning the wisdom of municipal parking bans, right? But the Denton situation just drove me, the logic of it sort of just drove me to that conclusion. Okay, so we made the decision, and what I mean by we, and we should talk about this more, a very small group, five of us, me, Ed, Carol, Rhonda, Kathy. That was the board of DAG. We made the decision. Take it or leave it, whether that's something that resonates with you or not. I find it remarkable, though, that it sort of germinated there with such a small group. But that we were really the only group doing this stuff. There was another group called Denton Off Fossil Fuels, did great work, but they had sort of dissipated. And so there was a sort of carte blanche of sort of organizational room for us to fill. And so we sort of felt like we have to step up and do this, or it's not going to be done. You know, we had the knowledge and the experience and the people involved. So we made that decision. What it was is a citizens initiative in our city charter. It says if you get a certain number of signatures, you can write your own ordinance. And so we wrote, with the help of a lawyer, we wrote an ordinance that fit on the back of a page. And then we printed that up, and the front was room for signatures. And we just went around. This started February 20th. We had our launch party. We probably got 200 signatures right there. We only needed 600. To get it done, because nobody votes in Denton, and it's based on a percentage of who voted in the last election. So it was actually
we can match them on it.
Yeah. Registered voters here.
Yeah, I know it's different here. So we actually did not work that hard to get signatures. We got 2,000, but it was sort of fall off the turnip truck easy to get those. I mean, we didn't go door to door. Actually, we just kind of went to a couple events here and there, had at the community market.
Our Mardi Gras.
We went to Mardi Gras, that's right. We do have Mardi Gras, that's right. So that's kind of the mechanism. We turned that in May to City Council. The way it works is City Council then has 60 days to review it. They could either vote for it, in which case it would become a law, or they could vote against it, in which case it would go to an election for the public to decide. We thought we were going to get a special election. This was a total mess up on our part, which is what we wanted. Turns out we had misread the city charter, and we weren't going to get a special election called for it. It was going to be the November election, which I thought was a death knell for us. There's no way. And Denton County is one of the most conservative counties in the nation. This is going to be tied up with the governor's race, in the ideological sort of baggage of a national, you know, election or a statewide election for these state offices. I thought our goose was cooked. But that was the hand we dealt ourselves. So we figured that out. And we realized we have to win 15,000 votes probably to do this. Instead of a special election, I thought we'd have to get maybe 2,500 votes, 1,500 votes. I mean, we're talking about 10 times more than we thought we were actually going to have to win to pull this off. So there were a lot of times when I thought I guess we're just doing this symbolically because there's no way we're going to win this thing. All right, so there's a lot of stuff here I could say. The July 15th public hearing, when City Council had a chance to vote for this or not, was a real turning point for us. I was amazed at the turnout. Over 600 people came, is that right? They set up 3 overflow rooms. I mean, council chambers could only hold a few.
Including, I had to sit in the Civic Center across the street, which was full of maybe 250, 300 people. They had a big screen up, and it was pretty, I'm sorry, I'm totally not joking. It was actually pretty, it was epic, man. Like, they had a big old screen up there, and they had a sound system going, and the press was there. And in the council chambers, you know, people would get up and they'd speak, and you just, you know, you're respectful because you're just, you listen, you know. But in the Civic Center, man, it was a party. Like, anytime anyone got up to speak, I mean, I have a fantastic video of Adam when he was saying his remarks, and the place would just erupt in cheers anytime he made a good point. I was just, oh, just like so proud of you. It was really, I mean, and it was, there were, yeah, probably 600 people went until 3 o'clock in the morning. And it started at 6:30.
Yeah.
People had to take numbers in order to...
They had to talk.
Yeah, and then they would call the mayor and say, okay, now we're going to have numbers 10 through 20, and people in the Civic Center would walk across the street. Yeah, it was. I was so proud of my town, and I was so proud that everyone showed up, stayed till 3 in the morning.
And the numbers, City Council Member Gregory ran the numbers. And this is when I started getting some real hope. He found out that of the cards submitted and of the people who spoke, 85% who were Denton residents favored the ban, spoke in favor of the ban. But I still thought, well, maybe that's just the bulk, you know. There's only 600, we've got to get 50.
Do you want to say, too, about who spoke against it and how they got there?
There was, I mean, the industry representatives came to speak against it. The former Texas Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice, came to speak against it. Our state representative, our state senator, both spoke against it. Ed Ireland spoke against sort of the industry sort of representative.
The bus that they brought?
They brought in a busload of people who never said a word, but just sat there taking up chairs in the council chamber. Mm-hmm. The night before...
Oh, and I just want to... I'm sorry. Because it was so epic. You can actually go to the City of Denton website, cityofdenton.com. You can search past agendas and videos. It was on July 15th. You can go. You can watch the entire 9-hour meeting. You can see Adam's remarks. And it was. I mean, it's really good. It's fantastic. If you ever want to binge watch anything, that would be the thing.
It was interesting because we were live tweeting the event, too, and people were tweeting like from Canada saying,
yeah, the website almost crashed. I went home to watch it because I had to put my kids to bed, and it was like it kept like freezing up because everyone was like, "You guys get offline! I want to see what's going on." It's so great.
The night before that, the industry released a report authored by the Perryman Group that claimed the Denton ban will cost the economy $250 million. It was this, and of course, media picked it up. They didn't read the report; they just saw the big numbers that bolded in red, and that ran in the stories the day after. And so then it became clear that they had two main tactics, which was the economic argument and the legal argument. We'll sue you, you can't do it, and it's going to cost you guys a lot. That was the main sort of themes of what went on. I took it upon myself, and some other people helped for sure, to debunk the economic argument. And I think that was really effective. We could talk more about that. I know it was effective because people gave me a lot of shit about it. And they never had a good counter. I mean, they never countered that. They just kept putting up the Perryman report. That's all they had. But those numbers were totally made up. And even if you took them on face value, they proved how tiny it was, minuscule it was for our local economy. Okay, so the Denton Taxpayers for a Strong Economy, that was a PAC that formed, that ran the opposition. They ended up raising $700,000 overall. Barnett Shale Energy Education Council also raised probably $300,000 or $400,000. It was about $1 million that they poured into the campaign. We were able to cobble together $75,000. So we were outspent more than 10-1. But Amber's right. We had the people. I mean, this may sound hokey or something, but this is, I'm here to bear witness to the power of people because I saw, you know, people making small contributions, but mostly contributing their time. That's how we won. And we ran grassroots, community-based things. We were in the parade. Somebody talked about being a Mardi Gras, I think that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. That's a great way to get people excited and involved. Just do stuff that's unique to your culture and your people, and associate yourself with that. This is what we're fighting for. Like our slogan was, this is our Denton. You know, you don't come in here and take over. That was really powerful. Fundraisers, people would volunteer, open up their homes. Denton has a great music scene. Everybody's in five bands. And so it was easy to just get a band together, raise money. So that was sort of what we did. It was extremely grassroots and very inspiring. The endorsements came out against us. The Republicans, Denton County Republicans, came out against us. The Chamber of Commerce came out against us. The Denton Record Chronicle came out against us, a local paper. The North Texas Fair and Rodeo came out against us. Everybody was against us, except for what we had were, we were able to get the endorsements of people with the least money, which were our musicians and artists. And we got all of our musicians to wear these shirts and do little testimonials online and take their picture and put up on our Facebook page. And we had an online social media presence that I really believe in. I know a lot of, even folks on my board, they disagree. They're like, well, it's easy to click like on something, and that's true. But it got so big, and it's so easy also to share and to develop a sort of momentum and enthusiasm about it, that I really think the Facebook page and our website were so valuable for us. And the other side, they put up a Facebook page, but they literally aborted it in mid-sentence.
Like they did. They literally did.
On the Facebook page, and they got like 11 likes on it. And it was just so obvious that they were outsiders pumping in tons of money. They didn't know anything about Denton. They don't care about Denton. And on the other hand, you had a real community that was looking out for each other.
I want to interject here, too. So Adam was talking about the endorsements against the ban. The Denton County Republicans came out against it. Here's the smart thing, though, is that everyone on city council, and y'all were going to pass the ban, recognized that this was not a partisan issue, right? And so I'm actually really proud of the Denton County Democrats that they didn't come out for the ban, because when you look at the numbers of who voted in November, keep in mind this was a gubernatorial election, Wendy Davis versus Greg Abbott, right? The same people who voted for the ban voted for Greg Abbott. And so I think it was really smart that the Democrats just stayed out of it and did not make it partisan, because if they did, it really could have changed the dynamics of everything. And so this is not a Republican or Democrat issue, this was a Denton issue.
So I'll just finish up, then I'll take my last 15 minutes to just distill some lessons learned, if they're useful or not. I hope that some of them are. Some of them I think you might know, but maybe it's useful to repeat them. But two last things of just about the story. So the last 2 weeks were early voting, and then there's election day on November 4th. The early voting, there were two polling locations open. In early reports, people were just getting exhausted and stretched thin. But we wanted to have somebody at each polling station, you know, as a poll worker. And it was a good thing we did, because the other side was paying people to come.
From Oklahoma.
From what? Wherever they could get them. We had volunteers there. And early on, the other side was lying to people. They would say,
no.
If you are against fracking, you got to vote against the ban, right? So vote no. And the language got confusing. And so we had to get two or three people at each polling station, because people are coming from the parking lot in different directions, and they had two or three people there. And so sort of watch this stuff. It was really, I'm kind of naive, but I thought that was a really low blow. We could go on about how being called Russians and all that.
Oh,
stuff.
Yeah. Oh.
But I want to get on to the lessons learned. So where it stands now is it passed about 59 to 41, and the day after, the morning after, two lawsuits were filed, one by the state, one by Texoga, which is like your VOGA, I guess. And it turns out that they knew they were going to lose all along. They had been doing polling. They had been paying for polling. City Council member Kevin Groden actually got hold of that somehow, got leaked to him. They have good pollsters, because it showed about a month out, it showed us up 60 to 40. And that's about how it turned out. So they knew, and they had drafted these lawsuits, and they were ready to go with them. We could talk more about that, but I'll leave the story there, because I want to say, again, maybe 10 or 15 minutes here, and then I'll wrap up. We'll take a break. I have maybe seven lessons learned, and I'll just say as well as I can.